Welcome to Different Gravy, not just another Sheffield Wednesday podcast. I'm one of the hosts, Richard Miller, and my co-host. Well, this is our end of season review, and I thought after so many years of doing the podcast, it was time for a performance review for Luke. I've spoken to all of his colleagues and sourced quotes about him. The only problem is I asked an AI to sort of sort them into nice nuggets for me, and it's mixed them up with quotes about celebrities. So we can unpick them after I've given them out. We can see which bits are like actually apply to you, Luke, and which bits don't. But anyway, my co-host, Dr. Luke Gledall, and this is one of the quotes we got about him. He's been brilliant. Last season, we focused on other podcasts, maybe a bit too much, which then in some games affected our own performance as a team. This man is so confident in his style and his ability. He believes if we podcast his way, we can be the best, no matter who we're up against. When you get someone come in and speak like that, it's hard not to follow. Everybody in podcasting growing up as a kid wants to yak, wants to make quips, wants to pod on the front foot. When you get a co-host on that page, it's a breath of fresh air. His philosophy on podcasting is amazing. Front foot, pressing, high intensity. As fans, that's like what they want to hear as well. So I think that might have been a bit of Barry Bannon talking about Danny Roll, but it's also Luke, Dr. Luke Gledall. How are you doing today, Luke?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, Rich?
I'm okay. I'm feeling really strong about this high concept intro format I've gone for.
You committed to the bit.
Exactly. And that's all we can ask at this stage.
You've left your big Willy Volks tackle. Your big old Willy in the tackle.
Exactly.
Full commitment.
And if nothing else, that's what Different Gravy stands for.
Very much so.
So this is one of our famously exhaustive end of season reviews, Luke. We're going to run an eye over all the players that, pretty much all the players that kicked a ball for Wednesday. We have actually trimmed slightly because I just couldn't tell you what Rio Shipston did in that one Carling Cup performance, to be honest. So the folks that have left an impression, the folks that have played league games by and large, there's 33 of them to talk about. And the idea, we're going to split this over two episodes. We're going to talk about the first 20 in episode one and then pick things up in episode two with the last chunk of players, which is 21 to 33. And we're going to talk about the manager in that section, and we're going to have a share of our thoughts for the season as a whole. But we're recording hot on the heels of safety. How's that feeling, Luke?
It's absolutely surreal. Like, it weirdly feels like one of those, I don't know, it still feels like it's from a different world, honestly.
Yeah. And the ending was so on, the ending was so on Wednesday as well. Like, it's not, we're supposed to, like, nearly throw it away, not turn up.
Yeah.
Particularly the West Brom game was, I just thought that was so on-the-nosedly on Wednesday, because that's the one we tend to. We go and have the big day at Blackburn, and then what we do is we pat ourselves on the back and then don't turn up for that next game at home and get tonked by West Brom, and then we've got to pick ourselves up again. That's what Wednesday are supposed to do, really, historically.
Not take maximum points from the last three games.
No.
I
think we'll probably speak at some length about the season as a whole and how our whelms whipped up and down as time went by. What we've decided to do in terms of how we tackle the list of players is look at their squad numbers, and we're going to go sort of squad number one, which happens to be Cameron Dawson, then drop down to the biggest squad number, 47, which is Pierce Charles. He's the one with the smallest amount of appearances that we're talking about today. And it's sort of, you have to split the list up somehow, and this is sort of a nice way to do it. It's a bit kind of random, and it means we've got interesting folks to talk about in each chunk. So we've spent a lot of time dedicated to talking about Mr. Cameron Dawson through the years. How was his 2023-2024 season for you?
Wow. So we start with Cameron Dawson. Now, I'm sounding quite upbeat, listeners, but just want to break a fabi for the listeners going into this. I just want to talk about my current situation, just kind of cover it. I recently lost a job I love dearly, and any kind of tasks and things I'm doing, I'm just finding a little bit harder, just in this kind of element of depression. So the tragedy and shittiness of this reminds me of the wonderful indie game Celeste, where the lead character Madeline climbs a mountain while battling anxiety and depression, and I relate pretty heavily. But somehow I get to start on the hardest peak, and maybe it's all downhill from here. So the gusto of my thick depression goes into the once again getting to type out missives about Cameron Jarvis Baxter Dawson. And that's the fictional middle names I gave him in last time's halfway review, and I'm running with again because it is very mildly interesting and more than I can bear to write anything about him. Since last time out, it's more of the same from the boy Dawson, albeit with the mild addition of three more appearances to put to his name from the halftime review. The first of his appearances was being in net for a Hull victory. His second was a miraculous tale of penalty heroics and net against Cardiff, and a decent clean sheet. His third? Why, what better event to follow up from two very well-saved penalties and a clean sheet than going down to the South Coast to ship four against Southampton? Master Dawson keeps his C+ from the beginning of the season.
Fair. Can I say this? Are we at the end of the Dawson contract? Have we actually got there?
It feels like just getting halfway to a wall. It never feels like nearing any satisfaction. That is a really, really good question. Surely this terrible website Transfermarkt, which everybody talks about, it would give us some information.
Yeah.
His contract expires on June 30th of 2024. And how much is worth? Is worth 500,000 euros.
Well, of course. I think your rating is very fair. I think one thing that's been kind of nice to see, and maybe sort of following the lead of Stockdale from last season, but I think he's sort of played the role of senior pro quite nicely this second half of the season. He doesn't seem to be bearing grudges or he's been the first person often on the pitch to congratulate Beadle, and I think that's big. I know there's kind of a goalkeepers union sort of aspect to things, but he could have been sore, and he could have been sort of, for want of a better word, sort of butthurt about things. I'm sure this is not how Cameron Dawson planned the final year of his Sheffield Wednesday contract being. Kind of usurped by two different players, once successfully and once unsuccessfully. By and large, he did the job when he was there. We saw enough to see that what we've all always kind of known and suspected, which is he's not really a championship standard goalkeeper.
No.
Certainly not the way that we're trying to play now. And not really under Chisco either, although it's a bit hard to know what our style of play was under Munoz. I'd be very extremely surprised if he hasn't played his last game for Wednesday. I wish him well. I think he's probably good enough for kind of lower end League One team, top end League Two team. So he might do a Wildsmith and kind of surprise us and have a kind of more positive tail to his career than tail end to his career than we sort of suspected. But anyway, yeah, happy with the. Did you say C minus or C plus?
C plus, I think. C yeah, plus.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, because there was some peanuts in his performance. if you pick up what I'm saying,
we've been there a few times.
Yeah.
This one, I suspect, will be a bit of a shorter sort of rule to run, but Pierce Charles is the number 47, so he's the kind of tail end of our list.
Pierce Charles. What can I say or tell you about Pierce Charles? I can tell you that he's a young goalkeeper who Luke has written a little bit of stuff about, but not much, let's be honest.
That's fair.
Pierce Charles.
Don't need to do this season.
I don't need to strain myself, do I? Another fairly decent young academy goalkeeper coming through the ranks, and it seems like we have quite a few of those. And he's also one with youth international experience from Northern Ireland. Again, another kind of hallmark and trademark of a young academy Sheffield Wednesday goalkeeper. I don't. That seems to be quite a unique thing to get into. Maybe it'll kind of come out of the end of my next few sentences. You know, he had a decent first experience, and I can't recall his second spell against Coventry in the Cup. No great expectations for him in his future, but nice to see him getting some more professional game time. For that, I think he deserves a C+.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, like, because Wednesdays seems to happen quite a bit that we seem to have a lot of young goalkeepers come through the ranks, and it's like, oh, he's really well thought of. He's been at the U17 level for England or some other country. Like, does everybody get to play at that level, or is it just, do we just seem to have like a weird kind of niche of kind of mildly promising young goalkeepers?
I wonder if there's an element of, you know, how sort of Sven-Göran Eriksson was kind of like any player that was even close to consideration kind of got a cap, because you might as well. So they ended up with a lot of people with like one cap, like Francis Jeffers famously played for England once and scored once.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's more of an element of that because there's just less to go on for the youth goalkeepers. So it's more like, oh, might as well give everybody a try and see who sticks to an extent. I don't know. It would be interesting to know whether that's part of it. Whether proximity to St. George's Park is any part of it, I don't know. It might fall down to really like ho-hum practical things like that. But yeah, it does seem interesting how many come through and play at that level. And a lot of our goalkeepers have gone on to have good careers, not with us necessarily, but O'Donnell and people like that.
What do you think? You know, in a world of, and I think this reference will come up again as well, so, you know, here's a bit of foreshadowing here. But, you know, we talked, joked in the past about Tom Leesian's deceptive height. You know, Tom Lees, who looked diddy, but yet is actually just a comfortable 6 feet in height. You know, he's a lot taller than Rich and I, let's put it that way. But, like, Pierce Charles, like, is Pierce Charles like a 5'10", 5'11" goalkeeper? Because he looks a little small for a goalkeeper.
He does
in a world of lanky custodians in the net. You know, he looks a bit wee, I will say.
Yeah, he does look a little undersized, doesn't he? I think. I think. I don't know who the authority is on these statistics, because we've talked about Reece James before, and there was also famously Kieran Lee was 6'2", and he might have been on stilts. I'm not sure what the official height's supposed to be, and then also what his actual height is, because I think, as you say, just sort of eyeball wise, he doesn't look like the tallest, and seems to be smaller than some of his peers.
Mm.
There have been good smaller goalkeepers, but I feel like the mould nowadays is to be pretty, especially in the UK, we like that Schmeichel sort of shape of goalie, don't we? We like a big hoss of a man that can also throw himself at
big hoss of a man. Love it.
Well, the Wednesday website is taking its own sweet ass time and also doesn't list his height, so there we go. That was a real cul-de-sac, and we're backing out. We're backing out, and we're talking about little Liam Palmer, who is now 32 years of age and will be probably, I think, 33 by the time he kicks another football.
What squad number is Mr. Palmer?
He's number two.
Oh, he's number two. Oh, that is good, good news. That helps me. Thank you. Liam Palmer. I'm reminded of The Simpsons on many occasions during my adult life, but in having conversations with my older brother Andy, I'm reminded of a mild, low-tier Simpsons gag that I probably haven't thought about since I watched the episode as a teenager. In the episode revealed that Marge, Bart, and Lisa lament that things have happened to their weirdly beloved Lenny, I imagine Andy thinks the same bemusing thing of me and my weird love of Liam Palmer. Admittedly, during the darkest periods of the second half of the season, I could lament that at least it's another appearance for Liam Palmer, as he notches another appearance to squeak up that top Wednesday appearance list. But anyway, putting any love and bias aside, how has his performance been? His performances have been a mix. No great heroics, bar a cracking finish against Stoke, and also since I've written this, a great lovely little finish in the last game of the season. But that finish against Stoke should have registered a mighty win, bar as falling asleep in defence yet again. Elsewhere, I think his versatility has made him some stopgap to be crassly bashed into place in the holding midfield role more often than not. Any criticism about him playing that is pretty much down to the mildest criticism of our January transfer policy and letting George Byers go and not getting another midfield replacement.
Hmm.
Regardless, he's been fairly solid among a lineup of some of our perpetrators in the identity parade of Sheffield Wednesday's dour 23-24 season. Also, it's probably unspoken of what he does to his teammates in the dressing room as Mr. Wednesday. Unsure if it's the last we'll see from the man we used to call Little Liam, but we will always have Peterborough home.
Ah.
I think he deserves a B overall. Maybe even that's getting pushed up to a B+.
I think B+ is fair. Yeah. I think to borrow an American sports term, he's been clutch. You know, he's those big moments. He's done his thing.
I love it when you try on the American sports terms. Like, you know, you're just wheeling out a nice fancy pair of trunks for your holiday. I love it. Love it, Rich. He has been clutch. He really has.
But like that finish yesterday against Sunderland. That's a centre back. So he's doing an underlapping run, picking up the ball from the maestro Barry Bannon and just calmly slotting it up between the keeper and his inside post. Top draw. And like again. You sort of remember that, like, this guy was allergic to shooting and goal scoring until about 2 years ago when he just figured out he could do it or learned to do it or who knows what. He's just got he's so comfortable and calm. I think there have been more slips. I think that in a way it's a little bit hard to talk about Palmer without talking about Bannon because I think they're at very similar stages in their career and similar sort of positions at Wednesday, you know, you're captain and co-captain. So I think there's lots of links between them. And I think they've both had fairly good years, despite the fact that you can't really deny they're both maybe lost a bit of a step. Like they're both not quite what they were at the height of their powers, but they're still bloody good because they've been great players. I mean, when we look at the last 10, 15, 20, the post-Premier League era of Sheffield Wednesday, Barry Bannon and Liam Palmer are absolute giants in that period of time. I know people sort of talk about we can't call people legends because they've only played at this level, blah, blah, blah. Well, for a lot of people, that's all they've known at this football club. And for those two have been immense during that period of time. And I think it's, yeah, another in a long line of very good seasons from Palmer and those brilliant moments. I think you see the kind of the duality of the getting older thing with Palmer, because the Stoke game, you get the finish, which is great, but then it's his side that completely, why were we chasing another goal and got caught? You know, it was him and Valentin got completely caught out with Stoke's equaliser. The fact that they had absolute freedom to just wander into the box, pick a spot, was a failure of that combination on the right hand side. And so, yeah, I think there's different parts. I don't love him in midfield. I think it's served a purpose sometimes. Volks has really been the only player that can successfully do that defending role for us. Mm. I suspect Byers could have done it given time and instruction. We never got to see Byers properly under role due to his off the ball incident. That sort of marked his card. I think B+ is absolutely great for Palmer. I would be tempted to give him another year. It sounds like he's probably going to get another year from the way he was talking post-match.
I hope so.
I think that's fair enough. I think that's the other thing you could say is he's not... We've got several kind of 30-plus-year-olds in the squad, and I think Palmer, Bannon and Johnson are not normal 32, 33-year-olds. They're fit as anything. Mm-hmm. They very rarely fail in terms of the athletic side of the game, which I think speaks very highly to probably how well they've looked after themselves in the intervening years.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's Liam Palmer, little Liam. Next up on the bottom end of things is Anthony Musaba, number 45.
Musaba. Now we get to check in on the man who claims he is 100% Jesus and who I claim is a Luke Liddell rate player at the half-season mark, Mr. Anthony Musaba. Has he come through and claimed the rate player of the full-season award? Unfortunately not, though sometimes football is a game of fine margins, and bizarrely I've been a touch confused as to why we have not seen more of Musaba in the second half of the season. Admittedly, he is fun and a great impact player to bring off the bench in that role, but honestly, I'd rather see him play more often than not in place of a starter like Windass. Still, his pace and tricky talents have seen him make some very decent contributions to goals that were pivotal and much needed. I think he still keeps his A from the beginning of the season.
Top goal scorer, top assist maker. And that doesn't count his... Against West Brom, he won't have been officially given any kind of goal involvement for two of them, I don't think. But was absolutely at the heart of them happening. You know, his run and flicking it back to Volks made that goal. I don't know whether he officially got an assist or not for the Ugbo goal, but we talked about sort of Munoz and role coming in. I've just felt there's a player there and he's got good instincts. He's got good goal scoring instincts. He quite often pops up in the right place. You could argue that he could do a bit better with those moments sometimes, but he's 23 with the best will in the world and he's playing for Sheffield Wednesday. We managed to sign him on a permanent. That puts him in a pretty particular bracket.
Yeah.
I think for all that, we've done very, very well with him as a signing. I'm really pleased with him. I think he gets a hard time partly because people have forgotten what wingers are like. We haven't had them for so long. they do lose the ball. They do make mistakes. But his output is pretty phenomenal given, as you say, he's not been a go-to starter all season. But I think he's made a lot of good things happen. And I think if he's given a simple brief, a bit like Johnson, he follows it. And he works hard. He tackles back. He's good at tackling, actually. I just think there's so much to like about him. And I also feel like we're maybe just scratching the surface, because these last couple of performances have been standout in a way that we've maybe not seen all season. And if Roll can start to get that out of him more often than not, we've got a real prospect on our hands.
Mm-hmm.
I know he didn't really make anything happen against Sunderland particularly, but you could just tell he was feeling, he nearly, very nearly did a couple of times. You could tell he's feeling himself, and he's, you know, he's confident, and he's that's a great place to be. So if Roll can kind of wind him up and send him out next season in that kind of mood more often than not, I think he's going to make things happen. And he has had some magic moments, the kind of breakaway goal. Who was that against in the end? And the one where Gassama and Smith kind of bundled it towards him, and he just... Anyway, he's had a great highlight reel of his own this season, and I'm really looking forward to more Musaba in the future, and I think A is really fair. Number three is Christian Pedersen.
Christian Pedersen.
Pedder by name, Pedder by nature.
Exactly. In theory, we should all be agreeing we're ticking the boxes on paper with this January recruit from Swansea. A proven championship left-back, check. International pedigree, check. Links with the coaching staff, check. And also, who doesn't love a tall, striking Danish blonde bombshell like Bridget Nielsen? Admittedly, Pedersen's time was probably as apt as Bridget Nielsen is, as I had to Google Danish actress to remember her name, and I've often forgotten Pedersen was with the club. His lack of game time advertised just how shonky and ropey he was during what little I can recall of his time. Admittedly, I didn't think he was too bad during his debut to Huddersfield, or at least the first half before we eventually capitulated to the terrible Terriers. Since then, injury and mediocrity have reigned in his time with the Owls. He gets a forgettable C- overall, and he can use his getaway sticks to stride back to Wales.
Nice. just a lame joke that I possibly should have interjected it with sooner. You said he's got international experience, Czech. Yeah, he is actually Danish, so he's not Czech. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, a bit of a funny one, because it would be interesting to know some of the thought process there, because there definitely was a moment where Roll, it seemed like he wasn't that chuffed with Johnson. I think that whole situation has been turned around, and I think Johnson put in some really good performances towards the end of the season, but there definitely was like a, you know what I mean? Like, there definitely was like a thing. There's
I would just love the idea of eventually, I really hope that, you know, whatever tenure Mr. Roll has with us, it comes back and then just does like a, you know, does like a book, and then just, I wasn't too chuffed with Johnson in the left back class.
I was looking at the numbers of chuffedness, and it just wasn't meeting my expectations.
I didn't think he was very Vorsprung durch Chofnik, I should say.
I was looking at the XC, and he was not pulling in the numbers as I expected. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it's hard because he was, his one start was one of the worst performances of the season at the worst possible time. So I think he was very much at the heart of things. So it's a little bit hard to mark him highly when that's the case. His other performances were just kind of coming on and providing a bit of respite for Johnson, weren't they, I think, by and large. Right, we come to number 44, Momo Diaby.
Momo Momo Diaby, or as he's known in my world as the Diaby I wanted to see more of, has disappointed me with getting the Different Gravy End of the Season Award of Least Present Diaby. Or maybe he's kept that treatment table toasty warm, and maybe that has helped the rehabilitation of Pervida further. In short, who knows what the fuck he has contributed for large swathes of the season. It's most frustrating for the fact he looked like the type of player we like in the middle of the park. A big figure who was leggy and combative, and surely the answer to a lack of meat in the engine room. I can't recall that same promise from the beginning of the season in that much effect while he's been coming back from injury. I think the token C he registered is probably still accurate.
And that would have mainly been based on not playing at all, playing that one performance, the mid-season. To have not moved things, having...
But I remember one of our previous reviews where we looked over Mr. Akinfenwo and talked about an incredibly promising small period of time that he played. And it felt a similar way to his, that was his home berth against Preston, I think it was.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I like a laid back, like my favorite player of all time is Waddle, like that, a man who could sort of put you on your backside without really raising his pace above a jog. I love that sort of thing. I don't know that defensive midfield is the place to ply that kind of trade. and he seemed to be okay until he was pressed. And when you know that as a team, then you just press people, don't you? Like that's. Why not just put somebody on him to the moment he gets the ball, he's under pressure. And then he will flick it over his shoulder or do other dangerous things that draw pressure. Not fit often enough. And when he played, a bit of a liability. I think we touched on it. The decision, what we did in midfield in January was kind of baffling in many ways, particularly when we decided we weren't going to play Hendricks at all in the second half of the season. So we just left ourselves so short on numbers there. I think he was fine. I think C's fair. Yeah. Not a loanee that I'm desperate to see back playing for Wednesday. and not young enough to be getting by on being promising anymore. When you're 27, at least it's going to be 28 pretty much by the next time a ball's kicked. So, yeah, you should be the complete article by then, really. And if that's the complete article, it's not a publication I want to read, Luke. Oh, again, it's all juicy up at the top of this list. It's got to be said.
I know.
Number four, Big Willie Volks. The Master of the Worm.
Master of the Worm. Worm Master. Worm Faster, you could say. You could say. But I won't, because I've written something else, Ridge. Some of the joys of the second half of the season against the Big Willie Volks, get more games and have a few stellar performances littered across that time. The man has a hearty three assists to his name and two huge ones at the end of the season in the meteoric comeback against Norwich City with some very old-school corner kick to the backstick prowess. Also, his full-hearted, cheeky game has some past-generation, full-blooded tackles and some beaming throws. It's been oddly disappointing that he hasn't had the chance to play the entire season in the centre midfield berth. Maybe he's in a struggling squad. We might as well have the beaming sound lad of Volks waltzing around the pitch. Disappointed he didn't get to wang in a worldie of a goal during his recent season, but overall, I think he upgrades slightly on his performance from the halfway stage with a B+ total.
Nice. Yeah, I think he was great for us last season, but I think he's had a better year overall than last year. He's not played enough, but it's not been his fault. I think whenever he's played, he's really been worth his weight, worth his place. the only player in the squad that could really play his role, and he does it with some aplomb. I'd like his forward passing to be a little bit better, but sometimes he pulls out great passes, even in that. You could tell he was desperate to get a goal towards the end of the season. He was pretty obviously going to shoot every time he got that opportunity, which let the opposition teams crowd around and stop that happening. But a fine season, another one that I would be pretty happy if we signed him up. I think we need more support there, but I think he's shown he's still very, very much a championship caliber defensive midfielder. And I don't think there's many people could have played that two in midfield and survived in most games. It's been a very attacking formation we've played a lot of the time. And Volks has been a big reason why that's worked. And I think how well he's done is sort of shown in his absence of how relatively poorly Diaby and Palmer did at filling in those gaps. I think, yeah, neither of those two really worked in a two ever. So, yeah, B plus I think is fair. I'd maybe be tempted to go to an A minus maybe, but
let's do it. Let's do it. Okay. I think he deserves some plaudits. Is that the word?
Plaudits. Number 42 is Bailey Tai Kadamatri.
Strange to think about the new young Bailey Master Delamitri in his first full season review. Hilarious to think he's almost doubled his scores, goals scored, going from 3 to 5 goals, though there is a strange caveat that is not a continuation of the promise he has had before. Maybe the delight being that he came and answered our striking options better, given a dearth of striking talent, when a time when we're limited in adding names probably speaks volumes. Alas, there was no maple-leafed goal-scoring wonder in our squad, and effectively we have redacted Lee Gregory's name from our records. Still, it is interesting that his appearances have been a bit diminished from that telling purple patch at the end of December. A hearty goal that should have been a winner against Swansea, and a token goal against Coventry and a cup pumping from the Sky Blues have been his further additions. Still, 5 goals in all competitions is a decent return for the young marksman. I think I can calm down a little and give him a still decent and realistic B-plus mark for his first professional season.
I think B-plus is good. He's, I think it's a good reason that he's not played as much in the second half of the season because we added was sort of a higher caliber. But still, yeah, there's a lot to like about him. He's a good prospect. He played well enough to get that to frighten us into giving him a longer term contract, which is really rare for us. So that's nice to know that we've either got kind of a prospect to build on our hands, or we've maybe got a saleable asset. I like a lot about his game. I think he still looks very young and naive in some ways, but he's pretty good at the pressing. He's quite intelligent with his pressing. He's got that knack a little bit like Smith of kind of somehow sneaking up on people, even though he's a bit of a unit. he also gets those sort of, it's sort of odd finishes. Some of his goals are quite odd sort of scuffy finishes, but they're effective scuffy finishes. So that's a nice habit to have. I think it's his first professional season, and I think he can look back on it pretty warmly. I think he's a nice person to have around the squad. I don't think we want to be in the position again where he's the only thing we've got to rely on, and I suspect that won't be the case. But he's a nice person to have if we need to kind of throw on an extra body, or you've got those moments where it does work a bit better. He's got some pace. He can put himself about a bit, and he'll only get better, I think, at the kind of dirty side of the game. And maybe another year rubbing shoulders with Smudge wouldn't be the worst thing in the world in that regard, because that's a man that's very good at putting himself about and using his physicality. So, yeah, fair, well done, Bailey. You've had a great first year. You've got a good amount of goals, and onwards and upwards. This is a contentious figure. I think he came in for some of Luke's infamous ire at the midway point of the season. It's Bambo number 5, Bambo Diaby.
In my current haze of depression, I really have to start this off with, is Bambo getting slightly better, or is he just making a few less clangers? The man who has amassed an astonishing 33 league appearances. I mean, this was prior to the last game, so I think he's on 34 now. And that was according to Wikipedia. That was according to Wikipedia when I brought that up and did the review. By the way, check out his Wikipedia. I'm curious if he really is called Bambo Diaby Diaby, as Wikipedia suggests, or whether someone is just being strange and bizarre. Anyway, is he twice as nice? Not really. If he is twice as anonymous as his first half of the season appearances, then I can be grateful. And I think he notches up to a C in the spirit of generosity.
Wow. I still maintain
you like him. Wow. I don't get his game. I see his attributes very clearly because the man is huge and he's beaming at the breast with all this power and muscle that's under the bonnet. It's, you know, it's sneaking out from his Wednesday shirt, but I think he has gotten better. He has gotten better.
I think he has.
That's the thing I want to say, possibly.
I think what I felt at the midway stage, and maybe from kind of very early on in his Wednesday career, is he's got some really useful attributes, but he needs to be managed properly. I think Iorfa falls in the same bracket. I think Iorfa's got lots to like, but switches off sometimes. And Bambo's got that same thing. So I think with the right people around him and the expectation that basically with Bambo, he goes at everything like a bull at a gate, and sometimes he is going to miss. And that will, as long as people know, I need to get my positioning right, because 9 times out of 10, he'll nail it on a good day. But 1 time out of 10, he's going to really leave us exposed, and I need to make sure I'm covering his back. I think with that in mind, he is stupendously quick and strong and brave. Those are all facets you can use. I think what we've got an interesting situation in defence, that I think almost all of them are much, much better in a 3 than a 2. I think Ekwe is too old and slow for a 2. Iorfa switches off. Bambo drops clangers. But in a 3, you can account for that, because as long as the other two are doing their job, you can have one person fall asleep occasionally or go and like head thin air. But the positives of Bambo are completely summed up in what happened at Blackburn. Like, if he has decided he wants to head that football, it doesn't matter if you are wearing a Wednesday shirt, the opposition shirt, the referee's shirt, you are getting headed if you get between him and that ball. It's just going to happen. I mean, he just destroyed his own face trying to head a ball towards the goal in that game. And he's twice, I think he's, because he knocked out Callum Patterson, if you remember, earlier in the season. Like, Pato's big long layoff was that Bambo just smashed into him because he had the audacity to be near him when the ball was in the air. So I think there's a lot to love about that kind of wholehearted. In some ways, he does remind. I think we sort of have remarked this before, but he reminds me of Reader in some ways. And I think he's probably not
interesting
too far off in terms of a little bit of refinement being a really, really useful asset.
That's funny, because I was there just thinking, just while you started talking about Diaby, I was like, yeah, what, you know, I was thinking about Reader, and Reader just came to mind, and I was like, yeah, but there was just so much positives to Reader's game that it could account for, you know, the shonkiness, the, you know, we're not quite sure we trust him at centre back, so we're going to shoehorn in at left back because there's just a lot to be accounted for with his pace, you know, the full-blooded challenges, a lot of character. He had that kind of beautiful, languid lankiness, Rita. Yes. And then you've just got to think about, obviously, all the goals. It was just amazing just how much of a goal threat he was. And not just with his head. It seemed to be with Rita's foot as well. It seemed to be any elements of those things you almost had. You almost had someone who, I don't know if you'd look at him earlier and say, you know, is there stuff that we can create? Can we craft a centre forward from you?
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. I think if he played for Tony Pulis or Megson in their prime, Bambo would be one of these like 10 goal a season defenders. I just think he attacks the ball with that sort of ferocity. I think he would just hang it up there and just let him win it at the back post. He'll give away loads of fouls, but he'll get a goal every like 3 or 4 games.
And you just play the Pomo percentages under those managers to just take the spoils when you can, right?
But I think the role we've been playing most of the second half for him is he's on the right hand side of that. He's either in the middle, where his job is just to man mark the centre forward, and he did a great job against. I spent all game calling him Brereton Diaz, but it wasn't Brereton Diaz. It was Sam Gallagher that was up front for Blackburn. But like Bambo, when he dropped
in, it wasn't Smodic. No.
So Sam Gallagher's a big burly frontman, like a Smith sort of character. Smodic is
big old unit.
Yeah, Smodic is a little like mosquito that snipes around him, a little yapper of a player. But like Gallagher, so Gallagher was having quite a lot of joy against Ehekwe until Ehekwe went off. Bambo dropped in the middle, and then suddenly Gallagher had to go into midfield to try and win the ball because he just wasn't going to win the physical battle against Bambo Diaby. And then the other thing is his pace down the side. So Patterson, when he was on the commentary for one of the games, was talking about actually, it's a tactic that we want them to play down, think they can get down the channel on the right-hand side, but Bambo's so quick, nobody will get past him. So I do think there's great assets there with him, but it's how he's managed. And I think second half, we've got that right more often than not. And I think he's come out with some plaudits as a result of that. We spent a long time on Bambo there. We skipped down to the bottom of the list again. And we've got Jedi Gassama.
I feel bad in writing this, since that I just don't think I've given. I think he was probably one of the ones near the end, and I don't think I've given quite the level of focus to think about him. But I'm curious, and I want to like chat about him a lot more with you, Rich. Jedi Gassama, remarkable to think he is somehow the understudy to Anthony Mesaba in the first half of the season. Moving on from there. You know, he's possibly looked the brighter of the two talents at times. And, you know, great to report back he scored more goals in the second half of the season. Though, weirdly, to think you look and think about his contributions and think there doesn't seem that many, but I must say. But again, that's probably down to his talents. I'm going to say he's bright, pacey, and classy, a lovely little acquisition, and one I'm hoping is still here with us this next season. He gets a B+ for his improvement.
Nice. I've really liked Gassama. I think again we've I don't want to say lucked out, but it does feel like dumb luck because the business we did in summer was so haphazard. I don't really know how we've ended up with those two, but he works really hard. He's really honest. Another one at. They're both kind of the same in that if they've got the ball in our half and they're asked to do too much with it, they're going to get caught more often than not. But if they're briefed to just pop it off for a quick pass and then run in behind, they generally are very good at doing that. And we've had some real star moments from Gassama. Some beautiful, beautiful moments. He's there's lots to like about him as a prospect. He's he's 20 years old. He's getting on. He will be sort of 21 soon enough. But you never know this, Luke, but I've got age plus days afterwards, so that's why I can. I really like him. I think he's more of a specialist than Musaba, which helps and hinders, because I think both him and Windass are best playing off the left wing and cutting in. So that I think that's limited his appearances a few times, whereas Musaba seems to be fairly comfortable either side. Gassama likes to be on the left cutting in. I like him a lot. 7 goal involvements overall, which is pretty good. 4 goals, 3 assists. It's not bad for the season.
Yeah.
For a young man.
I think it took him a while to kind of get to match fitness, or maybe I think he maybe had like a slightly injury niggle. It took him a while to get going and establish himself as part of the squad, day squad.
Yeah, he barely played under Munoz, did he? I don't think he. But apparently, Roel, just as soon as he walked in the door, was like, "I like you, kid." a bit more Germanic than that, but.
How would that sound, Rich?
This kid, Gassama, I like him a lot. Another one, I can't really believe he's our player. The other thing that's just worth mentioning, I think, with him and Musaba, which we didn't really touch on, they absolutely seem to love it here. Like, they love the interaction with the crowd. They love being Wednesday players. Because I think Musaba sort of said it after the West Brom game. He's not played in front of crowds like that. Most of the rest of the footballing world don't have. I remember watching when we signed all these like weird Portuguese players, even in the Portuguese Premier League, they're like playing in municipal stadiums when they're not playing like Sporting Lisbon or Porto. They play in front of like a couple hundred people. So Hillsborough is just unbelievable. I think Musaba was, there was one clip where he was really giddy and he's like, this is absolutely sick.
I agree, Musaba. I agree. It is sick.
But I think that's there. They both love it. They love celebrating the goals. I think that's been one of the joys of this second half of the season, is that it feels like they've been encouraged and allowed to celebrate the big the good moments.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was really surprised the interview Gassama, where he said he talked about the crowd and said it was proper bow. That was.
Well, around Christmas, he said it was proper crimbo, didn't he? But then it made sense later. He like backdated his reference.
So who knew that basically, you know, the foreign contingent we bring in, you know, both like just don't have this appreciation of the Wednesday fans. And also use these incredibly dated references from Bo Selector. It's weird. Bo
Selector and Ali G is their main.
They came over and they chatted some other professionals and like, how should I integrate myself with the British people? And like, use these cultural milestones that haven't dated one bit at all, and we all love, and they're not probably questionable or shitty in any way at all.
You got those two. Love thy neighbour. And like an Alf Garnett best of.
Just a program from the FA, like, you know, English culture curriculum.
Oh dear! Right, we're back up at the top of the list. We are at number 6, and we have Dominic Big Dom Iorfa.
In the spirit of me doing this, and so I've got a document here just to break even more kayfabe. You know, I've got a document here that's listing out all the players in, you know, by the squad number. So I'm going through the players largely in that order, just with a few bits of inspiration elsewhere. But, you know, the true spirit of like going through those squad numbers following each other for similar positions, We now have the fastest man in Yorkshire, Dominic Iorfa, up next. I often wonder with Wednesday that following the squad numbers in order, we're in the territory of centre-back, which is often shortened to CB, but would that initialism would actually be better as chief blunderer? It's something to think about. But anyway, going back to Dominic Iorfa, who has been much improved from where I think he should be at his age, I'm astonished he's still in his 20s. And I'm also astonished that he's been at Wednesday for so long now. I'm also astonished that he's been fairly solid collectively, and I will say his early season form hasn't been too mired or damaged by injury and a time away. So I think he gets and deserves a rotund B for his efforts.
Nice. Yeah, he's in many ways he's started to look like a very reliable old pro back there, which does worry me because he does have these moments, these brain fart moments. But yeah, by and large, we've been pretty free of those this second half of the season. It's been marginal. Largely an impressive run for him. Yeah, I think B's fair. I've enjoyed his occasional forays forward as well. He's had a couple of useful moments in that regard.
Do you have on your records? He's had a couple 2 assists. Astonishing.
He's another one that probably should score occasionally. I think him. The worst, we won't get to the worst culprit for that until the second episode, but we've got a few culprits for a few people who are very good at getting that first contact in the box and very rarely score from it. Set pieces overall this season have been a real bugbear, considering they were a strength last year. Both directions. We've really turned a corner you don't want to turn in terms of set pieces this season. Okay. Well, we have 2 number 36s.
Should we just tackle them both in order? Should we just do that? Should we just get them both?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, so the first half of the season, we had Devis Vasquez as number 36.
Sorry, I just had to. My cat Leonard was having some cuddles. If you hear any meows or purring, then that was that. And I just very unceremoniously dumped him on the floor. So forgive me. Cuddles. Forgive me, Rich. Forgive me, Leonard.
The cuddles ended abruptly. Because Luke needs his hands to talk about Devis Vasquez.
I need to gesticulate wildly about Devis Vasquez. So he's one of the many people who we do reviews for, and then we see that he's basically completely absent from the second half of the season. Yes. It's almost kind of beautiful and poetic that, you know, like the two-faced Janus god, you know, looks back on the stuff from the bad first half of the season and then looking forwards to the beautiful second half of the season. He's, you know, punted back to Italy, I think he was. I think he went back to went back on loan to somewhere else. So, you know, Devis Vasquez, you know, it wasn't too bad an experiment. It didn't work out. I don't think it was completely terrible. It just wasn't the new number one we needed to replace Dawson. No. I think I gave him a B because I think it was weird. Like, he had really good footwork, I remember, and I recall. And that was nice. He was okay. I think I gave him a B, and I think that's fair to kind of be a continuation to say, look, it didn't work out. I'm glad we could send him back. I'm glad we could, you know, use that to maneuver and bring Beadle in as we did.
Yeah.
So that's all I can tell you about the old 36. But let's look at the second head of Janus looking head at the new 36. And that's Pavida. And wow, what a dastardly signing to recall and rate. A player who I hadn't quite forgotten, but definitely was the last player to add to my squad list of reviews. And one quite possibly as tricky to take on one-on-one as the man is on the pitch. Ian Pivida was a devastatingly bright spark to Wednesday's attacking lineup in the time that I can recall him playing for us. Weaving spaces in and out of players in the final third, it is strange to look back at such a paltry end result of his efforts amid the treatment table and some dashes of misfortune. A hard one to call here, but I think he would either be a B-plus or an A-minus would be fair during his time. Some absences have felt very hard, and the notches on the treatment table have felt deep and deep into Luke's judgy-wudginess.
Nice.
Where would you say on that kind of... Let's think about rating for you. What would you give him, Rich?
When he played... Certainly, A seemed fair. A minus would have been the low end of the scale. But as you say, the big problem was availability for him. So I think a B plus is probably fair overall. He's one. It's always a gamble because he spent a lot of time injured, but I think there's enough positives. He's available on a free this summer. I would like us to be in that conversation. I think he is. I think he's a star player. And you've just got to hope that it was a blip kind of in terms of his availability, his injury record. He's lovely to watch. He's that thing. He's calm. He's got great feet. He keeps his head on his shoulders. He's got great vision. When he was playing and playing well, he made us look like a decent championship side, which I think is a real testament to him. He took some of the strain off Bannon, and I think we saw better performances from Bannon as a result of that. Yeah, the unfortunate thing is we've had to do a lot of the legwork of this season without him because of his hamstring going ping and then going ping again. I think B plus is fair, but I would like to see him back if that's a possibility.
Yeah.
Okay. This is, here we go.
Ooh.
This is a chewy one. It's a chewy one, folks. It's number 7. It's Malik Wilkes.
Steve Martin was once quoted as saying, "Talking about music is like dancing about architecture." And maybe I can paraphrase that in saying, "Talking about Malik Wilkes is like queefing about genocide."
Episode title.
Remember, queefing about genocide. Maybe it might be something, one of the more offensive things I think I say in this episode. It's possibly the most offensive thing. In fact, I wrote that down, and I think I did some changes from the original one. But anyway, remember that pitchfork,
Luke. Sorry, I saw a little clip. I'm someone who lets the Chinese state infect my brain with their mind worms by occasionally going on TikTok. I saw a clip of Marc Maron, who was talking about how in a simpler time he was friends with one Louis C.K. and he was going to appear on one of the late night talk shows, and it was the week of the Oklahoma bombing, and he's like, "You got to talk about it. What are you going to say about it? You got to talk about it." And then Louis C.K. spoke to the producer at the Tonight Show or wherever it was, and he's like, "Yeah, that's why you're doing the show and Marc Maron isn't." Queefing about genocide kind of put me in that same headspace. Like, got to say something about it. I've got to do something about it.
Following up, Rich, do you remember that Pitchfork review of the Jet album, which was a monkey pissing into its mouth?
Yes.
That. F minus.
Oh, man alive. Maybe that's it. so often.
I mean, I wish that was it of his contract. I don't know if he's still, is he still with us for a bit longer?
He had a whopper, I think. I think he might have got 4 years. Because remember, Darren Moore was desperate to get him.
Yeah, I know.
Absolutely desperate. And it's, funnily enough, that's what his performances have been. Absolutely blooming desperate. He is the one-man embodiment of we've lost this game, so we might as well try everything. Like, he's become a pseudonym for throwing a defender up front. Is, should we put Wilkes on? Like, is this when we put Wilkes on? Yep, 4-0 down is when we put Wilkes on and just hope that something will spark somewhere. He's woeful. Mouse-hearted. Just terrible. Terrible at everything. Terrible at passing. Mm. Terrible at running with it. Weak. Ineffectual. His one goal was kind of nice. And I thought, oh, maybe.
That's a good goal, yeah.
But that lasted about 10 seconds because it never really, that didn't spark anything into life, did it? Terrible. If we can find somebody to take him off our hands next season, let's do it. I don't want to see him in a Wednesday shirt. I don't see, there's no plus sides. There's no good factors to this. It's just all bad.
Yeah.
The pro and con list is a blank space and lots of content for the con.
It's just a funny thing that just Wednesday is doing this exercise and being like, you know, that some of these people are carrying the weight of Wednesday actually surviving, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Very, very heavily on their shoulders, and some people are just getting off incredibly lightly. And there's so many players who are just paid professionals who are just nowhere near good enough and make zero contribution. And maybe it reminds me of another striker who we'll get onto either this episode or next episode. Who knows?
It's going to be soon, I think.
Yeah. Anyway.
Next up at the bottom of the list is Reece James.
Once again, I get to think about another duff attempt at Sheffield Wednesday getting a left-back in place who is deemed not suitable and not up to par. There should almost be a museum of all the duff left-backs who never made it at Sheffield Wednesday Football Club. Like, walk along this aisle, you'll see people such as a bust of Peter Gilbert, maybe a painting of Royce Wiggins, or maybe a video of John Beswerick would be among the gallery of absolute left-back duffers. I don't say these names to include James as one of them, just to reiterate that it's something inherent to supporting Wednesday, is that it seems to be a given that we can never have a good left-back, is as sure as the taps not dispensing hot water on the cop of the North Stand. Alas, our second half of the season only has 3 more appearances for Reece James to add to any sense of evaluation, and in all 3, Rich, we conceded 4 goals. Fun.
Oh, dear.
I think time might have showed he is not quite the player I hoped he would be at this level, and I think he's downgraded from his halfway mark to a C-.
Yeah. Sadly, very fair.
I don't know with that situation if it's a bit like, well, you know, officer, I wasn't involved in the arson of these 3 buildings. And the officer's like, you were near the scene on all 3 occasions.
Yeah. And you stink of petrol.
And you eyewitness reports were saying you were walking from the scene of requiring, singing The Crazy World of Arthur Brown's Fire as well.
Interspersed with Firestar by Prodigy.
Exactly. So there must be some element of guilt around his character in those performances for shipping 4 goals each.
Just such a shame. Like, it felt like a... I do feel like bias probably fits in this thing where two players who looked a bit of a cut above in League One but didn't seem to carry that through to the Championship in any way. Because I think there's a frustration with James that he didn't get to play as often as he maybe could or should have. But then when he played, he was really underwhelming. And I think that's the same with Byers. I know we're sort of lamenting not having him as an option in midfield, but the fact of the matter is he just wasn't looking like the guy that played for us in League One when he played for us in the Championship. Mm. I think replacing him would have been a better option. Getting rid of him and then not filling that gap was the bizarre choice. But I can't really question too much the idea to slough him off and free up some money. Reece James, I don't know how long his contract is, whether it's a year or two. I presume we gave him 2 years, but I don't know.
Good question. He's also 30 as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's not a spring chicken.
Luce, yeah, you're not a spring chicken. No. I'm trying to not do my Werner Herzog for role, but I'm. It's just a very generic continental. Okay, so we're going from Reece James to who the aforementioned Georgie Byers.
It's disappointing that gorgeous Georgie Byers had no more appearance of Sheffield Wednesday in 2024. No upgrade on his B-, though his performance in the stands at Blackburn almost gets him an upgrade. We salute you, Corporal Byers.
It was rather nice. He's a handsome chap. I was very much shoulder to shoulder with Georgius George while he was in the stands at Blackburn. I sort of stepped on the toes of myself, didn't I, in the last summary? But in a way, Rich. Ashamed to lose him as an option, but also understandable. Thanks for the good times, Georgie Byers.
I'm just disappointed, Rich, you didn't get the chance to ask him about a skincare routine.
Yes, yeah. I think the thing that I was struck with as well is, as a man who is rapidly approaching his 40th birthday and feeling every hour of that descent into middle age, he just looked very young. And I thought, the pressure we put on these young men's shoulders, Luke, is what I thought. Even if they have nice jumpers and nice haircuts.
Well, of course, they've got all the monies to buy the nicest of jumpers. The
nicest of jumpers.
And the nicest of haircuts. Nicest of jumpers.
Number 27, we've done a bit of foreshadowing for this chap. It's Ashley Fletcher.
Is he worse than Wilkes? Probably not. Has he done fuck all and wasted our time? 1,000%. Glad I don't have to think about him anymore after this season. Here's your F, Ashley. Best of luck seeing if you can still football elsewhere and fuck off.
Yeah, ditto. Absolute waste of skin.
What else would you do with the skin, Rich? Just to...
Make a bag or something?
If there's a more serial killer thing I think I've ever said in my existence.
Awful. Just a woeful. You have to give a slight kudos because he was sort of vaguely involved in the turning point of the season at Leicester versus Leicester. But nah. Good riddance. I think the days of you being a championship footballer are very much in the rearview mirror. welcome to League One and League Two, my friend. That's as good as it's going to get. This is a bit of a tinged with the forgotten man, number nine, Lee Gregory.
A heartbreaking ending for a player who deserved much, much better. I've no idea why he couldn't leave a club. And I also don't know whether, if he draws a wage for doing naff all, as to whether that is somehow a way of saying we apologize. Yeah. You know, it's just never doesn't see the whole ending of Lee Gregory at Sheffield Wednesday is a damnation on our current regime. It's just an absolute fucking shit show. And I'm sorry, I'm really sorry that he had to like go through that and bear with it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, absolutely.
I gave him a C+ at the halfway stage because I think he did like a little bit of goodness, even though he was being weirdly asked to do a stupid, stupid role by a stupid, stupid man under a stupid, stupid regime. Stupid, stupid. But he gets a C+, and thanks, Lee. And then, you know, good luck to him. Good luck to him as next avenue.
Yeah. Just, it's disgraceful. As you say, like, I know people talk about how well-paid footballers are, but treated absolutely abysmally. I don't understand if there was no plans. We didn't even register him in the second half of the season. If there's no plans to play him and somebody else is offering even a bit of his wage, I think it just shows how bad of a businessman Chancery is. If you want a kind of one example that kind of tells you the story of a man, I think how we dealt with that and how we dealt with the negotiations. Because the way to look at it is if he's we're paying 100% of his wages to do nothing and another team is willing to pay a percentage of that, 50%, we've saved that 50%. He's not even sat on the bench. If we're not even going to register him, he doesn't even have the glimpse of a possibility of playing for us. We're paying for nothing, so anything another club does is worth it. Particularly a club that's in another division. So what's it doesn't mean anything to us. It doesn't affect our season. But these are the kind of financial decisions that are constantly made by Chancery. They always hurt us, and it's always based on some grudge or some slight or perceived wrong of him. You know, we're delighted to be where we are safe, but one of the ongoing kind of surreal feelings is, well, we don't want to talk about it too much because we will talk about it at length, but we can't trust that man to not completely spoil this season. I'm sorry, Lee. Thank you so much for what you did. You were an absolutely tremendous player for us. I have no doubt under Roll you would have been worth the occasional appearance. There's definitely been games where it's been suited for you. In fact, the thing we've asked Smith to do this tail end of the season, you're much better at than Smith, which is holding the ball and making it stick up top. You would ask to run in behind people when you are whatever, like 35 years old and you've never been a pacey striker. It's just a shame. For his sake, I sort of hope he can go get another year somewhere. He's someone I wouldn't be surprised to see pop up at Wrexham. As a League One, he's got promotion under he's got lots of goals under his belt at that level.
I mean, maybe, but I mean, he's also like currently he's going to be 36 at the beginning of the next season.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I appreciate it.
I think there is. I feel like Wrexham could maybe do a touch better. I feel like probably somewhere in League One is his next destination.
Yeah,
Wigan. It's something like that. Yeah, it'll definitely be a third tier or possibly maybe a fourth tier team. With ambition, will do that if he wants to still keep playing football.
Yeah,
you know,
I just feel like he deserves a proper final
goal season.
Yeah, just a lot of ill feeling around it. It's a shame. It's a real shame. This is finishing quite nicely. So we've got the last one from the bottom of the list is number 26, James Beadle.
James Beadle. And we look back on the acquisition and playing time put in from the young stopper we borrowed from Brighton and Hove Albion, the upcoming talents of Jeremy Beadle. James Beadle. If you can ever sense any hesitation in my voice here, is that it's a difficult one to give time to thinking about the young man who came in with huge expectations, glowing reviews from esteemed plaudits, and it seemed a perfect opportunity for the perfect new player to solve our goalkeeping issues. To go back to Jeremy Beadle, James Beadle, I have never had to say, watch out, Beadle's about the goofy, lanky teenager. But maybe a lot of the time, as Richard Miller so eloquently put on this podcast, he has been missing a king-making performance for most of his time here.
Mm.
Step forward, an interesting game against West Brom, and a massive 3 points and 3 goals for Sheffield Wednesday Football Club. Interestingly enough, his performance here was excellent, and yet he didn't have anything to show for the final home game of a difficult season. And yet somehow his contribution in that West Brom game reminds me of the punchline to a Jeremy Beadle joke, in that his contribution seems small, but on the other hand, it's massive. There is a sadness that the performance against West Brom came near the end of his Wednesday loan spell and not near the beginning, and it didn't result in any point or points earned, as Wednesday had a rare and devastating attacking performance. It's fine how you value and think of James Beadle as we bid goodbye to him for now or possibly forever. I think we can agree that he has been good, and I'll land on a hearty B+ for James.
Nice. Yeah, I think he's a young man with a very bright future. I think we've seen a lot to sort of speak to that. And I think there's a stat that no other goalkeeper's got as many clean sheets and as few appearances since he joined us. It's been a bit weird in that regard because as our goal... as our goal difference speaks to, we kind of win by a narrow margin or get absolutely tonked. And he has been there for the tonkings as well as the narrow margin wins. I think a lot to like about him. He's had good moments where he comes and grabs the ball and from crosses and things like that and takes some of the strain away. He's pretty scrupulous about making sure when he saves the ball, it doesn't end up in the second shot straight away, which is one of Cameron Dawson's failings as a goalkeeper. The kicking, I think when you're trying to pass, you're more likely to miss. I think that we let other players miss kicks and don't really comment on it so much. A goalkeeper's probably kick the ball more than most in a game, so it's more noticeable. But he's very rarely put us in trouble in matches. So yeah, I've been very pleased with him. I think definitely a step up on Dawson. You couldn't say whether we would be safe without him. I don't know, but I suspect we wouldn't be safe if we were relying on Cameron Dawson. I think not good enough at distribution and commanding the box, and too often makes howlers. So a good signing. I wouldn't mind seeing him back. I don't know whether that's a possibility or not. He's probably going to be sent out for another year. I believe Brighton have got three promising young goalkeepers, and he's not front of the queue. So I presume he'll go out on loan again. There is also a player on a free that we've had a nice dalliance with previously in Bailey Peacock Farrell. So there might be a few options goalkeeper wise this summer. We'll see. But I would not be upset if he's our number one next season for another loan spell. But we'll see. We'll see what comes on that front. Okay, our last player for this episode is a small Scottish man. It's Barry Bannon.
The wee Scottish man carries on his Wednesday career, slowly ascending up in the top 20 of all-time appearance makers for Sheffield Wednesday Football Club, teetering up as much as his diddy arms and legs will take him, scraping over the 400 appearance mark. Any comical vision of him trying to climb a large mountain seems to come into effect here, but even if he's getting nearer the end of his career, it removes his large size in Wednesday's history books and whatever we could substantiate as Wednesday's midfield. I think we've had a few flashes of Bannon brilliance in building from the first half of the season, and that's probably about enough to remind us that he can still be a class above who else is around him at his ripe age. I'm glad he's not completely done, and I'm super grateful for getting to see him in a position that he still has, legs for. These moments lead to a solitary goal and assist, coming towards a combined B+.
B+, yeah.
It's a harsh mark for our Bannons, our litany of Bannon seasons and appearances and memories and moments. You know, it goes up against that, and that's kind of unfortunate.
On his own scale.
Very much so, yeah.
Would
you say that he's worthy of an A-?
I think probably, yeah, I do.
Okay, let's do that.
I think he's... he's obviously got another assist, by the way, yesterday, so he's one goal and two assists, but anyway.
Thank you.
I think actually he's a funny captain in many ways, because I think he sets very high standards for himself. He's always like, his anger seems to be at a peak constantly. You know, like he starts off at a 9 and then he's like that teacher that screams at people constantly. So doesn't have anywhere to go when they are really, really angry. Because he's always angry and competitive. He's the refs he sort of bent double shouting at are numerous. But I think as a captain, he's sort of shown his worth in towards the end of the last two seasons. I think his kind of the what he demands of himself, he puts onto the other players, and I think we've really seen strong captain performances from him in the sort of dying embers of that last season and this season. And a vital part, it wouldn't have been that counted as an assist, but his shot for Windass's goal, for instance, there's sort of things like that that happen where it doesn't necessarily show as a strict goal involvement, but it only happens because he takes that good, strong shot. I've just been really impressed. I think undoubtedly some of his powers are waning slightly, but he's starting at a really high peak. Most players will never be as good as Barry Bannon is at the moment. But as you sort of touched on, it's maybe not the best Barry Bannon it's definitely not the best Barry Bannon we've seen. We've seen better Barry Bannons, and it won't get better from here. But most players are not as good as Barry Bannon is now. And I think that's really shone. He's undoubtedly still the star man in our team. He pulls the strings. He makes things happen. He's coped remarkably well with the fact that Roll's style of play requires much, much more of him. I'm sure he's run more this second half of the season than he's probably run any time in his Wednesday career. And he's coped with it, despite the fact he's 34 years old now. He's not a normal 34-year-old. He's a remarkably fit and well 34-year-old. Another fine year. I hope and expect him to get. I think he's sort of talked positively about being here for another season. I think he deserves that at least.
Yeah.
He would be a tremendous signing for anybody in this league or the league below, and therefore he's an absolute sort of boon for us to keep on. So thank you so much, Baz, and we'll look forward to seeing you again next season. It was an odd thing, sort of having the sort of lap of honour prior to being safe, because you sort of didn't know whether you were saying goodbye to some of these characters or not. But I do get the feeling with Bannon and what he said. I suspect he'll be with us for another season at least. Fingers crossed.
Thank God, because 402 appearances for Sheffield Wednesday in 10th spot. According to my records here, is Teddy Davison with 424 appearances.
Okay. So he could make his way into the top 10 easily with another season.
I hope so. And I'd also hope for another year for Liam Palmer so he gets a chance to, he can make a few more dents in that top 10 appearances. And
I would love
Mr. Wednesday to do such a thing.
Yes, absolutely. The only thing I will say for Bannon is, if he does stay, I think he's got to understand his role will be different. He probably will still be the club captain, but I think his playing time will not be as... I would be surprised if he's as ubiquitous as a presence in every starting lineup. Because I think we've got to wean ourselves off Barry Bannon as well. I'd like to give him another year. I'd like to give him another year, but I do think we need to start planning for a life beyond Baz as well. And next season will be the time to do that, the transition. Grand. Okay. Well, that's episode one. We'll say cheerio for now, folks, and look after yourselves. Thanks for your wonderful missives, Luke, on each of the players. And we'll pick up again in episode two.
Sounds good. See you and listeners then.
Cheerio.